No, and it did pretty
It's
well.
gotten, I guess, mixed reviews.
Okay.
It's gotten some really good reviews. Wendy's, for instance, was very, very positive.
Whatever.
It's gotten some negative reviews.
Well,
everybody else.
Wendy, you stand up for it. You enjoyed it.
Yes.
I loved it.
Don't apologize for something.
You're I might
go back
see,
and
it
see it again.
I honestly might, because I feel like I missed some things.
Yeah.
When do I ever see a movie again?
That's true. That's very true.
So on the Biz Lunch today, we're talking about movie critics who don't know what they're talking about.
That's the topic today?
Right, that's one of the topics.
Wow.
Well, then you should listen to us on the bonus hour.
So there's a new bill, I think, in the Senate that wants to make it illegal for videos to play automatically when you come upon them on Facebook and things like that.
Instantly. Really?
Illegal?
Illegal, because that would help ease our addiction on social media.
Oh. Maybe.
You think?
Interesting.
Mm. All right. You guys should go have fun, will you? Hey,
yes, thanks, Steve.
Please, have a corn dog for me, okay?
All right. Tomorrow we will.
Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio and tune in. The news is sponsored by Impact Optimize 2019. In the newsroom, here's Dave Schwann.
We have mostly sunny skies, 76 at O'Hare, and let's get a look at the Business Lunch numbers. The numbers all up on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow up 244 points to 27,108. NASDAQ up 117 to 8,292. S&P 500 also up 28 points to 3,009. And in Washington, a bipartisan budget and debt deal has passed the Senate. It's headed to President Trump for his signature. This would permit the government to resume borrowing to pay the bills and set an overall $1.37 trillion limit on agency budgets approved by Congress every year, also removing the prospect of a government shutdown in October and automatic spending cuts. General Motors reported a second quarter profit that rose just over 1%, as strong sales of higher-priced pickups and SUVs overcame falling global sales. GM says it made $2.42 billion, or $1.66 per share, from April through June, and that beat the Wall Street estimates of $1.44 for their share price. U.S. factory activity expanded at a lower rate in July as measures of production and employment fell. The Institute for Supply Management says its manufacturing index slipped just over 51% last month.
Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Now, welcome to Thursday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the WGN Radio studios above the Chicago River on this beautiful summer afternoon. It's been a great run for the past couple of weeks. We will talk to Bill Geiger a little bit later in the program about your retirement plans. The Dow is up 300 points today after some drops yesterday, reacting to the Fed, recovering today. We want to start with CNET, though. On a phone line is Joan Salzman, who is a senior writer at CNET.com. Joan, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be here.
So Lollapalooza started. They opened the gates about an hour and 10 minutes ago. And that's one of those things where everyone in the media in the city, that we end up, it's all we talk about for about 5 days, which, sometimes I think it gets a little too much attention. But a few years ago, I've never been to Lollapalooza, but I have watched it online. And Bennett Wakenight, the producer, just showed me an article that says that if you're interested in Lollapalooza, you can watch it online without dealing with the crowds and the heat and all of that this year, too. I think YouTube is carrying it.
Yeah, YouTube is streaming not only the festival itself, what happens on stage, but it's also going to be streaming special things like backstage moments and exclusives with artists when they're not actually performing. It's part of an effort at YouTube that's still pretty early, but YouTube has streamed Coachella for years, so it's something that they've found is worth expanding.
Yeah, and I wish I could. I don't know if Lollapalooza has been up every year. Maybe if they had their own sort of streaming a few years ago. I do remember one year going home and watching some of the shows. But this is a way for festivals like this, I would imagine, to monetize instantly beyond ticket sales.
Yeah, and it also provides, partnering with YouTube, it's the most reliable way to be able to get something streamed globally without having to deal with your own back-end problems, right, and buffering and that kind of thing.
Bandwidth and all of that. So it should be pretty easy to find, right? Just head to YouTube and look for Lollapalooza.
Exactly.
By the way, I'm performing Saturday at 4. I hope you'll watch. No, what I'll be doing is looking at my Facebook or Instagram feed endlessly, and there's a senator now in Washington, Josh Hawley, who's introduced this bill, which is interesting to me. He wants to do a number of things, but one of them is he wants to stop the autoplay video that you come upon on your social media feeds, he says, because that lures us in and helps keep us addicted to social media. What do you make of that?
You know, the proposal to limit autoplay videos is something I think a lot of consumers would cheer for. I don't think anyone really likes it when you open up a new window or you have multiple tabs open and all of a sudden one of them starts blaring sound at you because of an autoplay video.
Right.
I think that's one that is less controversial than some of the other ones, like you mentioned, the infinite scrolls on your news feed.
Yeah, explain that for me. I'm not sure I understand that, Joan. Explain it for me.
So the idea is that instead of having a news feed that continually scrolls and reloads new content as you continue to go down, seemingly until there's nothing on the planet left for you to see in your feed, it would limit the ability for it to scroll and give it points where it would give a natural stopping point if you don't want to be fed into this addiction mode of looking at your device.
So you could probably keep going. You just have to ask it to keep going or something like that.
Right, yeah. It doesn't clarify exactly how platform providers would be able to address that limitation, but it's something that, you know, we're seeing a lot of interest in digital wellness and in device wellness, and even some tech companies like Google and others offering things that would reduce how much you use them, but in the long run, be better for you as a person who consumes their product.
When it comes to the autoplay, the video, though, I mean, I have a side business, a travel business, and I will post videos, and I know they get more attention if the pictures start moving as soon as you're there. Now, I always have the volume down on my feed, so I'm not bothered by the sound, but I would think that Facebook and others would have a hard time with advertisers if they had to get rid of that autoplay.
Yeah, so as you said, there's ways to get around some of the intrusion from an autoplay video. Having sounds muted by default is one way that you can have an autoplay video that is less intrusive to consumers and doesn't run afoul of some of the regulations and, well, not regulations, but some of the rules that web browsers have put in place to discourage people to have those autoplay sound on videos.
And what are its chances of this? I mean, everyone talks about regulation. This is one senator's bill. I mean, I'm not betting on it.
Right, yeah, but we are seeing a bigger political appetite to take on Silicon Valley right now. So it's hard to say exactly whether this bill will come of anything. Plenty of bills are proposed and never actually make it to the point where they affect you as a consumer. But there's more of an appetite for this kind of regulation now than there has been in the past.
It seems like we just have to have some sort of coalescing behind one bill or another, or some plan to come up, you know, through the committee process by regular order, a way to do this. I don't know if an individual's bill, you know what I mean? There's going to have to be greater sign-on before anything sort of gets done, I think.
Exactly. But we're seeing a lot of, you know, we're seeing a lot of committee hearings addressing threats from the power of giant technology companies and the ways that they are able to affect our society, our culture, and our politics. So that's at least something to indicate that some action may be taken, maybe not this bill, but elsewhere.
All right. So while that's on our table, let's go to Australia, where Facebook was called to task. I think it was by the Labor Party there. They didn't like what some of their opponents were posting about them. Had to do with a death tax or something like that. And Facebook said, look, it's not our job to sort of police untruths when it comes to politics. I mean, I think it's kind of confusing. Well, they're supposed to be stopping quote-unquote fake news, but it's okay for politicians still to lie about each other, or what's this about?
Right. So this brings up a constant problem, a tension that Facebook has to deal with. When they are dealing with misinformation that one political party is protesting, the attitude at Facebook is that they're not arbiters of truth, and that their way to respond to this sort of misinformation is they have three levers they can pull. They can remove something that's an outright violation of their terms of service. That's usually really egregious stuff like pornography or violence or calls to terrorism. But on the other hand, they have this reduce element where they can just reduce the spread of something. They can do that for something that's maybe less objectionable. And then there's also the option that they can inform. They can have information links in something that people are saying is questionable and may not be true.
Sure.
In this case, they're saying that they don't really, they're not in a position where they can respond to a single political party's request to take something down.
All right, so two things there. So when you're saying if they find something that they think is a little hinky, they might slow it down, right, in their news service, so we wouldn't see it as often or wouldn't come up as highly in our feed?
Right, exactly. It's to reduce the amount that it's recommended to
Which
people
is kind of
algorithmically.
Funny, because it's either true or it's not. It's either good or it's not good. And if it's not good, I don't know why you wouldn't eliminate it, just sort of limit it. But then the other thing is, so here in this country, a lot of Republicans are referring to Democratic members of Congress. Some of them are socialists, but others as socialist. Well, that's socialist. That member of Congress, the Democrat, might say that's not true. But it's not really Facebook's job to take that down. That's kind of what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, it's a matter of how do you, you know, Facebook is a privately held company, so the First Amendment doesn't apply, but it is a freedom of speech issue generally. As a company, Facebook wants their platform to have a kind of free exchange of ideas. Where you get into the gray areas is like the example you said there. What is a political opinion? What is somebody just talking? What is somebody spreading misinformation with a nefarious purpose? Those are all questions that are hard to answer, especially when you're talking about Facebook's scale, the billions of people that use it every day.
Joan Solzman is a senior writer at CNET. Joan, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. It will be a short show today. White Sox baseball coming up after the headlines from Dave Schwann at 12:30. But right now in the studio, Bill Geiger's here. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. Welcome back, Mr. Geiger.
Good afternoon, sir.
We have a special sort of glow about. Oh, it's today your birthday.
Today's my birthday.
Happy
That's
birthday.
True. How did you know?
And so you're going to take all the big gifts that we've collected here and put it into your retirement fund, right?
Amen.
So we're here. We talk about retirement plans. And, you know, I have said earlier that we celebrated a wedding anniversary this week. So we've been back in the city of Chicago for a few days and looking at the idea of apartments or how do you, you know, allocate money and things like that. And
right.
I'm still all about the retirement fund, but here I am in my mid-50s, going into my mid to late 50s, and this is the time where you got to start sort of figuring out and changing the way things are invested.
Oh, you do, really. And I'll tell you a story. The director of HR, Human Resources, for a major corporation in Chicago is a client of ours. And he told me a story the other day. He told me about an employee of theirs who retired at the age of 65.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007, and he hadn't adjusted anything. He got crushed in 2008. They hired him back in 2009. He's still working 10 years later. He's 77 years old, and he's still working. And the problem was he was in a different stage of his life, and he hadn't adjusted that.
How do you do that, then? What should you look for?
Well, if you're in your late 50s to early 60s, you really want to get a handle on reducing your risk. You want to create income to pay your bills in retirement. And you want to think strongly about how you're going to reduce taxes and fees. And here's the issue. You're in a different stage of your life. And a lot of times the advisor that brought you to this stage might not be the same one to take you into retirement.
Explain that for me.
Well, you're in a different stage. You don't go to see a pediatrician anymore, right?
No, I don't.
You're in a different stage of your life.
Right.
Our firm, the reason that we kind of set ourselves apart is we specialize in that time frame, late 50s, early 60s, getting people set up for retirement because it's different than a 30-year-old. And we help them transition to retirement portfolio and into retirement.
So that's a good point then. So what you're saying is you're different from other advisory firms.
Right.
And that you sort of specialize in this area.
That's our focus.
Yeah.
Our focus is working in the late 50s, early 60s, getting them prepared for into and through retirement.
And so we've talked about this before, too, the idea that once you make this sort of transition, it's not as if your investments have stopped making money.
Oh,
right?
No.
It's just moving in a different direction.
No, it's just being a little more cognizant of risk, a little more cognizant that you're going to need some income that you can depend upon, and a little more cognizant that you want to make sure you're not overpaying in taxes and not overpaying in fees. You're still growing. You always have to grow your money. You're just doing it in a different way.
Yeah, I think sometimes people feel like they're, not that they're giving up, but that they're throwing in the towel, that they're retiring, that they're stopping, but you're never really going to stop if you're set up correctly.
No, you're not. And you retire 65, you might be in retirement for 20 or 30 years. You've got inflation all during that time. You need growth throughout all that time. You just want to approach it a little bit different.
All right, so how do listeners get started and what should we do?
Well, what we typically do is we have people in the office and we want to sit down and really understand what their situation is. We want to discuss what their issues are. And then we help them put together a plan for their retirement. And putting the plan together is really critical, Steve. If you were going to California this afternoon, you got your car, you wouldn't dream of just heading off without a GPS or a map, would you?
True, I would not, no.
No, you would need to do a little planning. It wouldn't take forever. Turn on your phone, put in the address, but you want to do a little planning.
I want to make sure I'm heading west.
Yeah, right? And then you're taking the best roads and everything like that. And it's the same thing with retirement. And that kind of dovetails into something we're going to do today for our listeners, Steve. The first five people who call in who have at least $500,000 in their portfolio, we're going to sit down with them personally and on a complimentary basis help them put together a full-blown plan for their retirement. It'll include an income plan. It'll include how to take care of risk. And we're doing this on a complimentary basis for the first five callers.
Bill Geiger, thanks for coming by today.
Nice to be here,
sir. Have a great birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.